And you are tuning into the Email Design Podcast, where we discuss the latest tips and tricks for email design and development. We are your hosts. I am Kevin Mandeville.
And I am Jason Rodriguez.
And today on the program, we're going to be talking a little bit about some new stuff with Gmail and what they're doing with some rendering, some email templates. But we're going to kick off today talking about our good old friends over at Microsoft and Outlook. So there's been some big news, big news on the rendering side for Outlook.com, Jason. We have got a brand new rendering engine for Outlook.com.
Yep. And it's something we've been expecting for a while now. They announced it last year that they were going to change it. So they finally made the switch, though. So that's what's important. That's actually
There. So this isn't breaking news right now. This happened a couple months ago, but not everybody may be completely aware about it. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, is we used to have the old Outlook.com rendering. And then we introduced Office 365 sort of into the mix, and that had its own separate rendering engine. And then they, which was a terrible, like one of the worst rendering engines we've ever seen, by the way, just, we talked about this on previous podcasts with mm-hmm. James White blogs and, but then they made an update and it wasn't as bad. But then you had these two different rendering engines of like Outlook products that were online. But what was even worse about Outlook.com is that they started to introduce the Office 365 rendering into Outlook.com, but it was split. So some Outlook.com accounts had like the original Outlook.com rendering engine, but mm-hmm. then some of the new rendering. You know how hard it was to explain to litmus customers what was going on as to how they would see even different tests that happened in their own.
I imagine it's just as hard for a Microsoft salesman to explain their different versions of Office to their customers.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. Welcome to being an Outlook salesperson. So,
yeah.
But luckily, though, that beta and that like rollout is now complete. So we are now entirely on one new rendering engine for Outlook.com. Mm-hmm. And we want to sort of break down what it is about this rendering engine that's different and what you need to be aware of. So it's a whole new Outlook.com. The UI changed a little bit too as well. Mm-hmm. But it's a new rendering engine. So the old hacks that we used to use with the old Outlook.com, think of line height 142%, some of the float things you did, using the external class to mm-hmm. target Outlook. All of that stuff is now gone. All of that is out the window because we are in a new rendering engine. So the big thing to note now is that all classes are now being prefixed with the sort of, it's a X underscore, so it would be dot X underscore sort of as a class name, mm-hmm. which is not targetable. You can't target classes that way, but that's sort of how it's processed in the actual HTML in the client. And then it's also prefixed by a completely random class that's generated. And it'll say something like RPS underscore A113 or whatever. It's just like a random generator number. It's dynamically mm-hmm. generated. But there's new things now that exist that makes it a little bit better, I think, in my opinion, and things, it's still targetable. So perhaps one of the big things to note is that the new Outlook.com does not support attribute selectors in CSS. So if you haven't updated your templates in a long time, you remember how we mm-hmm. used to use attribute selectors to get around Yahoo Mail from yep. rendering media queries? Well, if you still have that, those selectors are not going to be recognized by the new Outlook.com rendering engine. So at this point, Jason, nobody should be using attribute selectors in the CSS in the head of the document. They should just be using regular CSS.
Yeah, which I think is good because I feel like a lot of people used to be confused by attribute selectors because they're not super widely used if you're coming from like the web world. So that's nice. It cleans up the code a lot and makes it a lot more readable. But it's definitely something to note because there's tons of legacy templates out there using attribute selectors.
Yep. But one of the nice things about this is that Remy Parmentier found that we can actually use this as a hack mm-hmm. to simply precede any class by including, it could be whatever text we want, inside those is this a brace or a bracket? My mind's going to go crazy right now. But you just you can use whatever text you want. So he uses OWA, which I like because that's what we refer to this rendering engine as, Outlook Web App Rendering Engine, because it will fall under the umbrella of the multiple Outlook web app sort of webmails. And that's how we can target Outlook.com now. So we don't need the external class to target. We can now simply use this attribute selector way to simply have a styling that only gets applied to Outlook.com, which is awesome. And then just some other quick notes. No interactive emails. So it filters the input tag. No surprise there. I mean, you're still not going to even be able to get true support for background images in Outlook.com. But the other big bug to think about that, or to, you know, note, is that if you don't use a valid link in the Ahref, so if, especially if you're just inputting a hash there as a placeholder, it's going to render the text of the href into the text. So you just need to make sure when you're testing your emails and your templates now that you are using valid links in Outlook.com, because if you aren't, it's going to be converted to text and you're going to wonder what's going on. And actually, I've seen it throw off not just show text, but I've actually seen it throw off table structure to templates as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So a lot of people have gotten confused over that one. So those are just sort of the high level bullet points that you need to note for the new Outlook.com rendering engine. I think, Jason, though, it's pretty much a neutral move. I don't really think that anything got dramatically worse.
Things
have just changed a little bit.
Yeah, it seems pretty standard now. Like a couple of old bugs are not really to worry about. There's some new ones, but there's nothing too major that you need to worry about. Other than updating for those attribute selectors, which is something everybody wants to do. But it's nice to see them actually making progress on their email applications and unifying their webmail clients on this one rendering engine. So it's a little bit less for us to worry about as email designers and developers, which is always good.
Yeah. And I think it might be just a tiny improvement because some of the reset stuff that we had to worry about before doesn't necessarily exist. So I think it's pretty neutral, but maybe just tiny gain just to help with the reset stuff.
Yeah. So in other, I guess, slightly related Microsoft news, they also announced that they're retiring their desktop Windows Live Mail application, which a lot of people were using. I actually remember using it for a while back in the day. It was released back in 2012, has been around since. But with its new infrastructure, they are no longer supporting Windows Live Mail. So you can see that going away. So Microsoft's essentially encouraging everybody to start using the Outlook clients that comes with newer versions of Windows, or seek out a third-party alternative. And they're actually offering users a free year of Office 365 if they want to go that route, as a way to update their email client as well as get hooked on some more Microsoft products. But just something to know. So with things like Outlook.com, Hotmail.com, MSN.com, Live.com, those will no longer sync to the Windows Live Mail desktop client. So that is going the way of the dinosaurs.
Yeah, that support comes to an end in June of 2016. So this is great. Email client consolidation. We can't support that initiative enough. It's interesting too. Windows Mail has really been hanging on to the end of the market share for the top 10 for a long time. I mean, it's only been at like 1-2%, but it's just kind of been there. So retiring this client now, you would definitely expect to see an increase in Outlook.com opens, I would think, because that would naturally be where those users should migrate to. That would sort of be what I would expect is, you know, and even though it's tiny, you know, Outlook.com's been around like 7% or something. I think Outlook.com can creep up to sort of 10% in market share potentially now. And if it doesn't, that would be fascinating to see if this somehow backfires and they go to another email client. Yeah. So, I think it's just interesting. It's very minor, but I think it'll be interesting to see, okay, where does that momentum now shift in the bigger market share picture? So, all right. Want to let you guys know real quick, just a minute here. You can check out the podcast at emaildesignpodcast.com. You can check all the episodes there, show notes, links to everything we discuss. Check everything out there. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and SoundCloud. So please subscribe to us. Leave us some nice comments and reviews. You know, plug it for everybody. We want to get all the great listeners. We're trying to spread the email love out here. And we also have an amazing 14-day free trial for you of Litmus. So you can go to litmus.com/gift card, input the coupon code podcast, and you have 14 days of all the features we have to offer at Litmus. It's great. You can test your email in over 50 different email clients, Outlook, Gmail, you know, native mail apps on iOS. We got Gmail app, Android, we got everything in there. It's fantastic. You can run it through spam filters. Make sure you check all your links, images. Make sure nothing's broken before your email goes to send out so that you don't have any fear of pressing the send button. So again, just go to litmus.com/gift card, input the coupon code podcast, and be sure to just, you know, give our good friends at Litmus, just tweet at Litmus app a little thank you for doing that, because they're really great for, you know, just supporting the community like that, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of community, while we were on our extended hiatus from podcasting, one of the things we were working on is an addition to the Litmus community called the Template Gallery. So this was launched a little bit ago. It's essentially an online gallery of free email templates that any of you can go and download and use. And we actually worked with within Litmus and a few of our industry friends to build some really cool email templates that cover things like product launches, account management, marketing. So pretty much a template to cover anything you might need to send an email for. And it comes in a couple of different coding varieties. There's a hybrid version of each email, as well as traditional responsive and mobile aware versions. And a couple of templates for both MailChimp and Campaign Monitor users, too. So this was really fun to actually put this project together. I work with designers in the industry to build these really great email templates and actually get that out in the wild. So we've seen a really big response from it since then. Tons of downloads, tons of people using those templates. So it's really gratifying to see this project actually come along despite us not podcasting and talking about it when it was actually going on.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun to work on that. I know you and I did it. Definitely got to give a shout out to Glenn Smith and Clinton Wilmot who contributed as well. So be sure to give them a thanks if you ever download or use their templates. Again, templates are completely free. And we're definitely looking forward to expanding and getting more contributors to the community, Jason. I mean, this is something that, you know, we have sort of four different categories right now of, you know, different templates. Series, I guess you could say, but we definitely want to build and expand on this and have more email geeks contribute to the community and provide their own templates.
Yep. Yeah. So we're definitely working on, that's one of the things I'm focusing on lately is figuring out a good way for people to contribute and essentially build emails up to a particular standard or a set of guidelines so that we know that the quality's there. So definitely look for that in the coming months as a way to contribute to that community template gallery. Get your emails out there, start helping others, and letting them send better email campaigns. Not to be forgotten, we still have our Slate templates out in the wild, which have been around for, God, quite a while now at this point. But you recently updated those to the hybrid coding approach a little while ago, too. So those are all good, solid email templates that you can use and be happy and safe knowing that they're going to display well across email clients.
Yep. And I guess I would just say, Jason, if anybody's interested in working with us to develop these templates, just to ping us on Twitter or email us, especially if this is something that you want to start planning ahead for or start, you know, work early. And yeah, I mean, I'm very excited to see us build out the template section in the community to really be like the best place for email templates. And you know, selfishly, since I work on Builder, I'm excited to see all the really cool integrations and things we can do with Litmus Builder with all the templates. So, yeah, it's been a great hit, and definitely go out to Litmus community and check out the template section if you haven't, because there's some really good stuff there now. So now it's time in the program, Jason, to talk about our favorite Gmail. Email client, Gmail.
Everyone's favorite email client.
Everyone. So there's a few things that Gmail has done recently that I think have been of note. One that was definitely caught our attention was the Inbox by Gmail updates. They released a bunch of new updates to Gmail, Inbox by Gmail, some of which were not necessarily related to email rendering. But the one that was is a feature that they call glanceable newsletters. And so what they are essentially doing is they are sort of, and we're not even necessarily sure how they're doing this, Jason, but they're fetching data from the email and selecting certain content to display before users open the email. So this is essentially sort of replacing preview text to get sort of pinned or like highlighted items in the inbox before they open the email there. And then when they do open the email for inbox by Gmail, that the first thing they see will not be the email content, but those sort of highlighted items. And we're not sure how they're doing it. The obvious answer would be schema, but there isn't any published documentation about how to leverage this. We reached out to some of the newsletters that had been featured that have this functionality in case we reached out to Medium, and they said they did nothing special to get this to work. They did nothing on their end. And so it was actually interesting that the Gmail article that was released, it basically showed that Gmail team is this works on many of the popular newsletters, and the Gmail team will continue to add more. And this feature will work best for the daily link digests for most news sites. So it seems that Gmail is doing this manually on their end and selecting emails to do this with. I'm not sure how they're even going about doing this because it doesn't seem that senders are necessarily using schema or doing anything out of the ordinary. So it's interesting how they're sort of overtaking email design itself a little bit or content itself.
That's what's weird, is it seems like they're essentially taking email design out of the situation. It's not that content's no longer reliant on email designers displaying it or designing it a specific way. They're just scraping that content and displaying it in their own form. Similar to how like something like Facebook Instant Articles takes the content of a web page and displays it in their kind of predetermined style. It's one of those things that's like for the sake of the user, for the sake of the user experience to get information quicker, display it in a cleaner manner, whatever, you know. But it's definitely weird to see, and something we want to keep an eye on because it's directly related to email design and taking us out of that equation.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, it would be nice. And I can totally understand if they're just sort of beta testing this and whatnot. But if this carries forward, this is something you definitely would like to see them provide documentation on and give users the ability to control this via schema. But I would say just from a larger point, yes, it does seem that they're trying to take design out of the picture and control the content of email in their own UI and control everything on their end from that perspective, which is incredibly dangerous.
A little scary.
But Lauren wrote a fantastic blog post over on the Litmus blog that broke down everything you need to know about this feature at the moment. And you can take a look at a lot of the articles and examples that we just talked about. Continuing on Gmail, the other points that I wanted to make about this is that there was a talk a few months ago at the Enigma conference from a from an anti-spam and abuse research lead at Google named, is it Eli? I might be pronouncing his name wrong here. It's Eli or Eli. But the talk of the title was Lessons Learned While Protecting Gmail. And the reason I want to bring this up is that there was a very interesting slide in the talk that was labeled Key Challenges in 2016. And I'm going to read in reverse order just because reading it will – it'll sound cooler. But the key challenges they view that they want to tackle this year are advanced phishing attacks, so things like spear phishing, email security standards, which they say is yet to be fully adopted. Interesting how they have an interest in email security standards. Hack site, Google, good sites used in phishing attacks. And then the last one, which is the most important to us, is dynamic rendering, which they label as CSS JavaScript, example, media queries. So the fact that they are now in a talk from a security standpoint, labeling CSS as dynamic rendering and as a key challenge, I think is massively troubling.
I definitely agree with you there. Yeah. It seems like we've always known that they've had a problem with CSS, media queries, all of that, but to have it labeled as a key challenge for their security team in 2016 is, yeah, that's a massive problem.
I mean, I'm still of the belief, Jason, that someday they will have to support media queries and have better support for CSS. I think that is inevitable, but it just seems that we are just nowhere close right now. It just seems that they're just so focused on security. And then they published an infographic alongside it as well on what we've learned protecting Gmail and just all these security things. And I don't know, I guess I just stress that there needs to be a balance somehow, because there is an impact for the user experience on it. And it's unfortunate because it just seems that we're far away and that they're just so security driven that we're not making advancements on that end so far. And there's nothing publicly anyways that I've seen that really points to anything otherwise.
Yeah, what I'm hoping is the case is that I remember you went to Inbox Love last year and there was somebody from the Gmail team essentially refusing to talk about media queries and some of our complaints, but stating that they understand it's a concern of ours and they've heard our cries for help in supporting something like media queries. So I'm kind of hoping the security presentation, them saying that it's a problem, is a signal that they're thinking about it and trying to figure out a good way to implement it, which would be a good sign for us that they will eventually have media query support and better CSS support. But that's just me kind of wishing and praying that that's the case. There's no real evidence that that is the case. So I guess with anything Gmail, it's a matter of waiting to see what they deem as necessary for their email client and for their users.
Yeah.
All right. Starting our first episode back was the last one. We started doing this fun little closing segment on the podcast where we talk about our favorite emails of the week. Might not be from the past week, but it's something that came across our inbox recently that we really, really loved and wanted to share with you guys. So this week we're looking at the Type E newsletter, which is from designer Paul Airy, which is a great newsletter that he's had a couple of issues on different email topics. It's an email newsletter for email designers and developers. So you can imagine it's a really good one. So in issue number 4, he talks about accessibility. So using things like semantic tags, color contrast, type sizes to make your email campaigns as usable as possible and as accessible as possible for as wide a range of users as possible, which is always a great goal. It's something that you and I have been talking a little bit about lately and more internally and trying to update our own email templates to be more accessible. But this Type E newsletter is extra special in that Paul actually built out an accessibility switcher within the email, which is essentially 3 buttons along the left-hand side in the header of the newsletter that allows you to switch to different accessibility modes. So the standard one is exactly how you would normally see the newsletter. The text is an appropriate size. It looks good. It's nice and clean. There's the large version, which bumps up the text size of everything in the newsletter, making it a lot easier to read for people with vision issues. And then there's also a contrast mode, which inverts the colors for everything in the email, the background, the text. So it makes it more readable for people that like that high contrast view. But this is such a great example of not only interactivity in an email, which is always awesome to see, but it's such a beautiful example of using interactivity to reinforce this educational concept, because it's very much an educational email for email designers. When you can illustrate a concept like that in the email itself, along with that lesson, it really allows you to drive home that point and kind of show off what's possible within that email. So I absolutely love this example. This is one of my favorite emails that I've seen in the past few months.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love the interactivity component to it and how it really gives the users the option to pick what they want. I think it would be interesting if we as a community could somehow create a standardized UI and UX around this, you mm-hmm. know, a standard type of interaction. Because I don't know that this should be front and center for everybody, but I wonder if there's a standard way we could do this. If there is some way of opting into this type of email that then gets added for those types of users.
Yeah.
I'm thinking along the lines of something like that, that could be really interesting to sort of make this a part of every single email design. Because I love it, and I think it's fantastic, and I think it's great that Paul's really sort of leading the initiative around thinking about this, because I don't really feel like too many other people are in this industry at the moment. And for us to be thinking about things like this as well, and I think, yeah, we should be looking how to create sort of a shared interaction here, because I think there's potential for this in the future to have a place in email design.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels like we're entering a place, not only in email, but like the web world. I feel like people are talking about accessibility more and more, and it's becoming a more and more important topic. So I feel like we're at the cusp of something much bigger related to accessibility happening. So if we can use an idea like this in email to help push that forward and help users out in the end, then that's definitely a noble goal that we shall all be working towards.
Yep. Great job, Paul, though. We love the email. We're going to have to get Paul on the podcast sometime.
Yeah,
to talk about
definitely.
Because this is just, he does some great stuff with accessibility and typography. So, all right, that's been this episode of the Email Design Podcast. Just a reminder, check out every single episode of the podcast, all the show notes, links over at emaildesignpodcast.com. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud. And you can get 14 days of free Litmus. Just go to litmus.com/gift card and input the coupon code podcast. All right, email geeks, that's been this edition of the Email Design Podcast. We'll see you next time. Reminding you, keep your table cells aligned and your styles in line.